the results of the 10-year plan to end homelessness after the second year. As we talk about a lot on this show, we are in a climate where the pressures on people at the lowest income, working people, seniors, people with disabilities, have continued to mount despite a lot of great efforts that we've also highlighted on the show locally to help find some more resources and assistance to help not only bring people out of homelessness, but for people who are in housing to help them have the opportunity to succeed and achieve what they can. A couple weeks ago, the city of Portland, as was reported by the local media outlets, released some very exciting numbers that showed 39% or reported a 39% reduction in the number of people counted in the annual homeless street count. And of that, a 70% reduction in people who had been identified as chronically homeless who had been counted the year before. Further, the report also included some very exciting numbers about the number of people who've been placed into affordable housing over the last 2 years of the plan. And as well, there was a press release talking about some of the impacts, the positive impacts of this plan. At the same time where that's very exciting, there is less enthusiasm about what the number means from a number of people in the community, including some of us here at Hole in the Bucket, with the idea being that these numbers are really great, but is there a deeper story than the numbers show? So tonight's show, we have with us here from the Bureau of Housing and Community Development, the director, Will White, and then staff, Sally Erickson, who was the lead staffer involved in this year's count. Then we have Mark Jolin from Join and Israel Bear from Street Roots. But to really get the show rolling, we thought it would be appropriate to talk to City Commissioner Eric Sten, the leading political leader of the 10-year plan, and really the driver who's pulled a lot of the key components and players together to make these first 2 years go. So we're going to open with some questions that I posed to the commissioner on the subject. What have we gained in these first 2 years? What can we celebrate from these numbers? And what challenges lie ahead? So, Sean, if you want to roll that interview, please.
Yes, in many cases, a lot of truth on both sides. We've made a lot of progress as a community. We have helped just over 1,000 people who had lived on the street for a year or more, and a year or more is what we called chronically homeless, meaning you've just been stuck on the street basically for a very long time. That number, which is all real people that we know, correlates pretty closely to a street count that found maybe 900 less people who appeared to be chronically homeless on the street. So that's all really good news. And the city and county and community, it's really the community's strategy, focuses on chronically homeless people for two reasons. One is, and this is the first couple years of hopefully a sustained effort, one is because they have the greatest human need. These are people who are literally living on the street as a permanent situation. The other is we did some work that found a couple years back that was the basis of some of our new strategies that chronically homeless people, well, a smaller chunk of the homeless population, eat up much of the resources that go into the systems. And so I'm into it because it's the right thing to do. It also turns out that if you actually get those folks housed, you save money on hospitals and jails and other things that really they shouldn't have been in the first place. So it's really good on both fronts. Now, what some people are saying, and I completely agree with, is that, you know, you should not read progress to mean that we're anywhere near solving the problem of homelessness. And anybody who actually read that out of the articles, I doubt was reading them. There's still going to be, you know, maybe as many as 15,000 people who experience homelessness on a temporary basis each year. There's a chronic shortage that's getting worse of affordable housing in the community. We have all sorts of holes and gaps in our approach to helping people, I mean, let alone having a safety net. So we're a long way from getting there, but we've made progress on one key component. And we've also, I think, maybe more importantly than just the numbers, I think we've turned a corner in terms of spirit or psyche of the plan itself. I mean, I think people now know in their gut that we can change what is a reality that maybe we've taken for granted, people on the street. And I think we know we can do something about it. We've made progress. And to some extent, a lot of this is about kind of the heart and spirit, both of the people who've been kind of completely alienated living out in the street, and the community itself who's allowed itself to grow a little bit weary and blind to this. And so I think we've shown we can make some progress. The progress is real. If you're one of those people that have been living on the street, you now have a place to live. It's a huge step forward, but we still have a long way to go. The count came up with a little more than 900 people, less chronically homeless people. Our count is solid on the 1,000 chronically homeless people that we've helped into housing. They're totally different sets of measurements. So those line up pretty well. You know, if you think we got 1,000 people off, there's 900 less because they've been replaced by some people who have become chronically homeless over that time period. You know, it looks to me like the numbers are pretty solid. Whether they're exactly right or not, I just don't know, and we can let people debate that. Even if they're down a bit, which I don't think they are from what we think, we're still making good progress. And the question 2 years ago was really, can we change our ways? Can we inject some new energy into the situation? Can we get things done? Is there hope for people, you know, that a community like Portland can get people off the street? And any way you count it, there is. The biggest hole is homeless families. We have made some progress on homeless families, but not like we have on individuals. It's a more complex problem in the sense that parents and kids tend to be much more hidden. The parents fear losing the kids. They tend to be way more dispersed. They don't come downtown and hang out. And so that's a huge one. We're still butting up against a lack of service dollars to help particularly people struggling with addiction, trying to get off drugs and other addictions, and people who have severe mental health issues. Those are groups of people that there are proven treatments out here. I mean, there's nothing more heartbreaking than to see people who are ready to make to go after recovery or have a treatable mental illness, but we don't have the service dollars to tie up with the housing. So those would really be the three areas I think we're struggling the most in when it comes to homeless people. For the most part, I think when you're talking chronically homeless people that are in the city core, it's reasonably consistent. But there's no doubt that poverty is being pushed out of the city of Portland to the eastern part of our city limits and into Gresham, Morgan City, in some cases out to Forest Grove. And what we really need, I mean, years ago, I mean, some listeners will remember, I've been a proponent for many, many years of having a tax on the sale of real estate in the region so that we could fund affordable housing programs. I think that makes a lot of sense because when the price goes up, the fund would go up. And you know, we're talking about something less than 1%. We're not there yet, but there is some groundbreaking movement being made in Salem, if you can believe that. We're close as a community, perhaps adopting a $30 to $50 million annual state housing fund driven by a small fee on recording documents. And you know, Portland is making progress in part because we put a lot of local money into housing. We have a set-aside, for example, where we require that 30% of all dollars that the Portland Development Commission spends, this is new this year, be spent on affordable housing. The smaller cities don't have those kind of resources, even if they had the will. And so the state funding is going to be very, very important to the next step in taking on poverty because, you're right, poverty is moving out of the city in many cases. And so that's not what we want. We're trying to keep as much affordable housing as possible, but there's no doubt that the bigger demographic trends are driving that.
So, this is a little bit off the subject of the direct target of the 10-year plan, but you know, in simultaneous with the development of the 10-year plan, the city council has adopted the community recommended SAFE plan. How is the elements of that plan that will require some city funding, how is that faring in the budget deliberations thus far?
It looks like the key pieces are all funded, the day centers and the training for the police officers, and I think the benches are already in, although that's a pretty minor piece. And you know, I think the SAFE plan is really a policing plan, and it's a program with the downtown community to try and figure out sort of how to improve the retail climate and all those types of things without hurting people. And it really fits in the spirit of the 10-year plan, which is let's try and go after causes and solve problems rather than, you know, things like this sit-lie ordinance of a few years back where the strategy for cleaning up the streets was to disallow sitting, which doesn't, you know, really work. I do try and be clear to people that the SAFE plan is really, I think, in the spirit of our strategy on homelessness, but it really isn't a core part of it. I mean, we're trying to deal with housing and services and the things people need to solve their problems. The SAFE plan is really about sort of day-to-day, what do people need to get by, and that's important, and also how can the police and the business community be more holistic in their approach. And believe me, I certainly welcome the changes, but they're not really, you know, getting at the kind of structural change that we're after with the 10-year plan. We're looking for thoughts and ideas about this. I really feel that the next phase of this is better workable ways for the greater community to help. And I'm almost looking for how can we design ways that, say, a community or a church can help take on the resources and human connections. A lot of this is about human connections, and you can't underestimate how alienating it is to be homeless. But how can we all connect up better? And I really don't believe that the city and county can end homelessness in 10 years. But I do think the community can. And I think the city and county and other partners have enough going that if we can design some ways for Portlanders of goodwill across the board to get more involved and be able to help more directly in kind of a structured way, I think we could actually pull this off. And we don't think in 10 years we'll necessarily never have a homeless person, but we ought to have a city in which you never have to stay homeless. If something happens to you and you end up homeless, you ought to have an option not to stay that way. And then that would be an end of homelessness as we know it.
So that was Commissioner Eric Sten discussing the 10-year plan, what we've achieved and what we haven't. And now I would like to welcome our panel. I'm just going to ask you to go around and briefly introduce yourself, maybe starting with Will, then Sally, Mark, and Israel, and then we'll get into the conversation. So, Will, welcome to KABU.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Glad to be here. I'm Will White, the director of the city's Bureau of Housing and Community Development, which is the city bureau charged with the 10-year plan to end homelessness.
I'm Sally Erickson. I work at the Bureau, and I'm on a staff one of a few staff people that are working on implementing the 10-year plan to end homelessness.
I'm Mark Jolin. I'm the executive director of Join Connecting the Street to a Home. We're an organization that for about the last 10 years has been doing street outreach and helping move folks off the street into permanent housing.
And I'm Israel Baer, the director of Street Roots, the local street newspaper.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate all of you being here, especially because I think all of us in this room have a lot in common that we're working for, particularly on this issue, but around issues of poverty and trying to get people more opportunity. I think that's a shared value that we all have. And I think I've, in conversations that I've had with all of you, there's been a lot to celebrate about some of the accomplishments of the 10-year plan there. I think some of the comments that the commissioner made about a real change in the public awareness, that is certainly something that's been very true in the 10-year plan. The concept that something could be done about it is a really exciting concept. At the same time, from the beginning, when the 10-year plan was introduced, I got really nervous because of the way it emanated from the federal level and feeling nervous. Is this another Clean Forest initiative or No Child Left Behind initiative where you have a great sounding goal, but that the funding and the real oomph is not behind it to make it a reality. So now I want to open the discussion up, and I think, Will, the best place is to start with you, which is that it was very exciting news that came out when the report came, particularly the Oregonian. One of the things that struck me is in their editorial they said, every now and then something comes along that is wonderful and possible. I mean, that almost as glowing as we've seen the Oregonian be towards an initiative of Commissioner Sten or an initiative that works with homelessness. What do you see as the biggest accomplishments in the first 2 years, and what are some of the challenges that lay ahead?
Well, Michael, I think the news has been very good at this early point. We're just at the end of the second year of what is a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. The biggest single accomplishment is that this is front and center on the city's agenda of goals that we are trying to accomplish. I've been working in housing in Portland for the last 14 years. homelessness has always been kind of a very much a side issue, and it's now front and center. I think that's critical, because until we have that and until we have an array of different organizations working together to try and solve that, we're not going to see a substantial reduction, let alone an elimination of homelessness or chronic homelessness. So we were real pleased to see what amounted to approximately a 40% reduction in the number of people who are actually counted in the one-year street count compared to 2 years ago. However, as everybody knows, it's very hard this is not a scientific study. It's hard to know where people may be who are in various kinds of homeless situations, families, individuals, young people, older people. They all have different ways of coping with homelessness, and we make as good an effort as we can with the resources and time we have to find where those folks are and to come up with a count. So we counted 2 years ago in 2005. At that point, there were over 2,300 people that were counted, unduplicated individuals, and this past January, it dropped to under 1,500. I believe 1,438 was the actual number.
I wanted to hear the negative concerns, the ongoing concerns.
Oh, yes, thank you. I think the biggest concern is that in order to continue having this kind of progress, it takes a lot of resources. It takes human resources. It takes dedicated people working in nonprofits, in city and county organizations, out on the streets and in offices, working to get people into housing. And we need more affordable housing that's built that is really affordable to people with very, very low incomes, people that are may have no income, may have a minimum wage job part-time, they may be on disability or Social Security. We need housing that those folks can afford, and it's very expensive to build that. We also need to be able to fund the services to allow those people to be more successful, even if they are placed in housing. So whatever their barrier may be, it might be a substance abuse issue, it might be a mental health issue, it might be a domestic violence issue. We need those services to be in place to really support people to be able to succeed in their housing. And I think, as Eric said, the city alone isn't going to be able to solve this problem, but the community as a whole, I think, can. And that's what we've been working to create over these first 2 years of the 10-year plan, is getting nonprofits, the different government agencies, philanthropic organizations, service organizations, all working together to try to end homelessness. Even if there were statistically an exact 40% reduction in the number of people who are homeless over the last 2 years, having 1,400 or 1,500 people homeless in our city is unacceptable. And so we're a long ways from reaching the goal.
Now, Sally, you were the staff person with the Bureau that helped put together the count and get the organizations all focused on what the count.
Right.
One of the things that I had heard is that the methodology in the count this year was different from the year before. Is that accurate? And how is the methodology different? And in your opinion, how do you think that might have affected these numbers?
Mm-hmm. And before I answer that, I want to say one other thing just to clarify. Eric Sten mentioned something in his comments that this was a point-in-time count. It's an approximation. You know, it's almost impossible to count every single person. We're always going to miss some people who are out there when you count on a given night. You also have to look at over a year's time. And he talked about approximately 15,000 people in the city experience homelessness over a year's time. And in addition, this was just a street count. In addition, there are hundreds, thousands of people that are every night in emergency shelter, in transitional housing, and getting rent assistance. So this is definitely not saying there's only 1,400 homeless people. That's not accurate at all. This is saying that on this given night, we were able to get an unduplicated count of 1,400 people. And there were many more who were in shelters that night. There are many more that we probably weren't able to reach. What's different about this count from 2 years ago is we really made an enormous effort to count, to do an even more comprehensive job than happened 2 years ago. as happened 2 years ago, joined, led that count. There was extra effort by outreach workers during the entire last week of January. And that last week was not our choice. That's HUD. We have to do this count every 2 years because the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development requires it. So they chose that night. We also wanted it to coincide with a one-night shelter count. So that was another methodology that was different this year. So the one-night shelter count was occurring. So, you know, the TPI shelters, including Jean's Place and Clark Center, and a number of other shelters are all included in there. Anybody that was turned away from shelter that night for the first time were included in the street count. So if somebody wasn't able to be served in shelter and they told the person at the shelter that they were going to sleep outside, they were included in the shelter, in the street count. We contacted about 200 agencies and programs who serve homeless people and asked them to review their data and you know, give us a list of people that they knew were sleeping outside on Wednesday, January 24th. Previously, I think about 50 agencies were contacted, although 2 years ago, Mark Joyn had a lot better response from some of the agencies. We received responses back from and surveys back from a couple dozen agencies this year, but some of them were new. We heard from police precincts this year. We got information back from emergency rooms, from meal programs, food banks, health clinics. So a number of places where people who are on the street are served, as well as, of course, the outreach programs.
For clarification, to make sure I heard it right, did you say that so in this past year there was outreach to more organizations, but the amount of organizations that gave data back was less than the year before? Okay.
And in addition, we did a longer survey. We didn't do this 2 years ago. We wanted to get a little bit more demographic information about people who are on the street. What are some of the barriers to housing that they've experienced? We asked people if they were offered housing, are there reasons that they might turn it down? So we're still compiling some of that information. So that was it. Sort of those four things that I highlighted. That was the methodology.
Yes, this is Jay. I would like to ask Will this. In your article yesterday in the Oregonian, you mentioned the impending expiration of federal rent subsidies and the problem that poses. I know that with the increasing condo conversions, there's this obvious danger that these places will be bought up if there isn't public purchase. And could you speak to that? Because you're talking about, you mentioned, for example, 950 federally subsidized units which would be lost. What are the prospects of public purchase of that? And
very good question. This is a problem we've been focused on for the last couple of years. We've known it was coming. The portfolio of housing that's here in the city of Portland is 12 properties that comprise over 950 units of housing. Statewide, there are 122 such projects. And these have all been supplying supplying affordable housing with rent assistance contracts built in for the last 30 years. And they're now coming to the end of their mortgages, their mortgage payments, and to the end of their Section 8 contract. So between 2007 and 2013, all of these properties will have their contracts expire. Cities made it a top priority to work on the preservation of that housing because the rent subsidy that comes along with the actual physical structure is financed by the federal government, the Department of Housing and Urban Development. It's something we would never be able to replace on a city level. And so to the extent we can keep those operating, it's going to be very, very valuable to the community. The problems or challenges, Jay, are that there are all of these are owned by private entities or private individuals. They're not mission-oriented nonprofit owners. They're folks that went into this to do something good, but also to have a positive financial return at the end of the day. And so the other challenge is that most of these are located in some of the hottest real estate markets in the city. A number of them are on or near the South Park blocks downtown. Some others are near the Pearl District. And so any of these, should a new owner come in that was looking to maximize profit, they could easily turn these into condominiums or at least market rate rentals at the very high end. So what we're trying to do is to work with nonprofit purchasers who can come in with some their own resources and some public resources, buy these properties in such a way that HUD will agree to continue the Section 8 rental assistance for the folks that are living in that housing.
Are CDCs, could you very briefly say, are CDCs involved in this? And if so, which ones?
Yes, CDCs or community development corporations are among some of the parties interested in purchasing these. To name a few that have expressed interest that I'm aware of, REACH, Northwest Housing Alternatives, Innovative Housing, but not all are CDCs. For example, Cedars-Sinai Park, which already serves a senior population, has been interested in some of these properties because many of them do focus on providing housing to senior citizens.
Switching to, because that is definitely going to be another challenge as we move forward into the future years, because the residents of those are without that housing in lieu of that affordable housing that they have are potentially new candidates to be living on the street. So that is another looming challenge that's pending. But I want to now give an opportunity to hear from Mark and from Israel. So Mark, Join has been extremely involved both in the counts that the city has done before the formal federal system came on. Join did sort of their own count starting, what, maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and it blended into what then became the bigger count. What do you see in the 10-year plan that's working well in these first 2 years? And then going back to the count, what do you read out of these latest numbers?
I think out of all of the numbers that have come out over the last 2 years, what we're seeing is some validation for the core ideas, the core policies of the 10-year plan. One of those is a rejection of the notion that because someone has been outside for a long time, they've either chosen to be homeless or that their homelessness can't come to an end. At Join, you know, we've worked with people who've been on the street for a long time who now are considered chronically homeless sort of from the beginning. And we've always had some success with those folks, helping them get off the street and into permanent homes. And the 10-year plan, I think, kind of embraces that notion and says, okay, it may take more effort, more investment, but not only is it good for the individuals, but it is a good investment of our resources as a community. And I think we've had a sense of that being true at Join for a long time. I think the numbers that are coming out as different providers, other providers in the community are kind of adopting that same housing first strategy and a focus on chronically homeless individuals and what the system calls high resource using families. We're seeing that success across the board that yes, if we engage and really work with folks and have some resources and frankly really draw on creative resources in the community. So for us, at Join, that means building relationships with landlords in the private marketplace who have units, who can help us get somebody in, who can be flexible with their criteria if we can provide good support services once somebody is in. We're seeing that work, and we're seeing folks, at least at Join, the first 25 people who we used the city's vouchers. The city's got, as part of the 10-year plan, a voucher program, and it's just a rent subsidy program. It's a limited duration. Most of them are budgeted about 18 months. But with those, we were able to move folks inside who on average had been homeless 10 years each. And after a year, we still had 90% of those individuals in housing. Again, using our private landlord partnerships, but they were in housing. Great for them, and we got lots of really, ultimately these are, the numbers are fine, but this is about individual people, individual lives, and that's certainly how we come at it as an organization. But we've got great stories of people who took that opportunity of being in housing after all those years and worked with us and worked either to get into employment or worked to get benefits that they had been long entitled to but hadn't been able to navigate the process. And their lives are much better for having had that opportunity. And we're seeing on the cost-saving side, which is, of course, Commissioner Sten was talking about it too, that those 25 people, when we checked just police contacts, those are folks who'd been out on the street, Some of them are drinking, some of them are using, all of them are camping. So they're all sort of involved in minor law infractions. They get generate a lot of police contacts. So that group of 25, it had somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 Portland police contacts, 100 just in the year before we helped them move into housing. And after 6 months being inside, when we annualized those numbers, you know, there was a 90-something percent drop in how many police contacts they had. So just from that, you know, sort of looking at it from the overall how are we spending money in the system, the investment we made and the city made and Join made in sort of helping those folks get off the street paid off multiple fold. And so I think that's, you know, whether the 1,400 number is quite right or not, you know, I think these overall numbers are suggesting that there's truth in the policy that's kind of at the core of the 10-year plan. I think the challenges for us certainly are around retention. The city has made that initial investment, especially in the area of rent assistance, and that's great. I mean that very sincerely. But I think where now our challenges is on the what I'll just call the income acquisition side, whether it's in helping people to obtain disability benefits through federal programs, whether it's the VA or Social Security, or getting into employment. And I think, you know, we've got a lot of people who we have moved in to housing with these vouchers who have a lot of continuing barriers. You know, part of the concept in the 10-year plan and the notion of housing first is that you don't require somebody to be clean and sober before they go inside. You know, you really take people where they are and give them an opportunity to use the stability of housing to make a fresh start, and you support them once they're inside with the services they need. And you know, for some folks who've been outside a long time, it is a struggle. And Commissioner Sten mentioned the service dollars around alcohol and drug and treatment programs. That's certainly a big piece of it, but a lot of it is employment training opportunities, real advocacy for folks with multiple barriers around getting access to disability benefits. And so for us as an organization, we've put a lot of additional emphasis onto that into those areas. We were sort of out there trying to find new partners and do some of the same kind of creative relationship building that we've done with landlords in the private sector around employment, but also really advocating with the city that the next phase of this be a focus on income acquisition and how do we make sure that these aren't just 18-month hiatuses from the street where then we lose people back onto the street because we haven't been able to help them get that income. So, you know, I think that is probably the biggest challenge that we're facing from at least at Join from our perspective is continuing this success and really being able to provide the support to people that they're going to need to succeed.
Israel, this is Israel Baer from Street Roots, so I'm directing this next question to. So you bring a different perspective than the rest of the guests in that you don't work for an organization directly involved in the 10-year plan, but as a media outlet, you've covered it a lot. Were you surprised when these numbers came out? What are your feelings about the accomplishments and challenges?
Well, I think Street Roots 110% supports the 10-year plan to end homelessness and what's being done. I think it's really important that we don't look at homelessness under the microscope. And homelessness is a cause of the labor, free trade, the war on drugs, war, the lack of health care in the United States. And I think that sometimes I'm not sure if it's possible that we end homelessness without universal health care. I'm not sure if it's possible that we can end homelessness without massive work programs to follow the housing first. And I think the 10-year plan to end homelessness has done a phenomenal job at identifying the causes of homelessness and then housing people through the 10-year plan to end homelessness. I think we risk getting pulled under, our political will being pulled under by a much larger ship that historically says that homelessness is a byproduct of these much larger issues. And until we address those issues head on, we're not really getting to the root causes of homelessness. So I think it's a very complex issue. I think it really becomes difficult when you're a media outlet or an advocacy group, when you're trying to mobilize a group of people to educate them on the lack of funding, the lack of public funding for public housing at a federal level, Section 8, the fact that the administration has continued since the Reagan era to continually slash human service funds. And how do you mobilize people and educate people that these things are happening at a federal level and not undercut local efforts to end homelessness? So I think it's, you know, it puts advocates in a very tricky situation. I think that it's really important that we, when we release numbers about homelessness, that we put it in context. And by putting it in context, we're saying, when we just say that homelessness is decreasing, we're saying we're winning the war on poverty in America. And the reality is we're not winning the war on poverty in America. And so we have to look at this in a much broader sense. So,
one broader sense that I want to suggest is that the next topic that I'd be interested to hear you on is, you know, we're talking about this great success in Portland. Commissioner Sten addressed it briefly, but I'd like to get to some of the things that I wonder how they impact the numbers and the success that we're seeing. We know in general census trends that lower income people have moved out of the city. The argument that we make on the show quite often is that they've essentially economically been forced out of the city. They can no longer afford to live there. When we think of homelessness, it's been miscast generally as an urban problem. Certainly we've experienced that here. But we've also seen some new things in the metro area that suggest that homelessness is growing in the metro area overall. There's a tent village in Tigard. There is a new homeless youth center in Hillsboro, which the community got behind and funded because there was a demonstrated need. In Clackamas County, there's been a lot of different things that have made the media with how campers have been treated or people staying in cars in public right-of-ways. So homelessness as an issue has risen around the region. Is that a result of the success here? Is it related to the success here? Is it what Israel was talking about, which is despite the success here, the overall challenges to low-income people are outstripping what Portland alone is able to accomplish?
This doesn't quite answer your question, but I want to follow just a little bit on what Israel is saying, because I think it really is important to understand that the 10-year plan is a strategy for how you deploy your resources. It's not, you know, and hopefully if you can show that you're deploying them more effectively, you're going to create some momentum for providing additional resources on a local level. But it is not, you know, it is not solving the affordable housing problem. It is not solving the problem of reduced Section 8 funding. It is, I mean, all the structural issues that we face as a community because we're a part of a larger national policy agenda, those are real. And they're ongoing. And we're, you know, our success at the 10-year plan will be buffeted by those larger issues. And, you know, so I think I guess I'm sort of I want to agree with Israel that I don't want to create the sense that the 10-year plan somehow is going to solve the larger issues that are creating the problem of homelessness, that are putting people into homelessness every day. And that instead we think about the 10-year plan as, all right, you know, what are the best policies we can have as a community with the money that we have to help people succeed in getting off the street and staying off the street? And so as long as we're looking at it in that narrower perspective, I think we can be very happy with what is happening and the numbers that we're seeing. But it would be a mistake to underestimate the continuing pressures on low-income people in this community that are going to continue to make homelessness at least a short-term circumstance. And you know, coming to your question, it's very possible that part of the reason that we didn't count as many people this year as we did 2 years ago is that, excuse me, that people have moved out into outlying areas, that there aren't as many people downtown where they're easier to count. And that they may have left Portland altogether for the outlying areas. We don't know that, I don't think, for sure, but it could certainly be part of what's going on. And I don't think there's any question that the outlying communities are seeing their own homelessness issues arising.
I would add to that that I agree with everything that's been said, including the supreme importance of looking at the larger frame. Homelessness is one issue within our economy, within the situation of poverty, whether it's in Portland or nationally. And it's a bit ironic that even as the federal administration has increased funding for homelessness specifically and launched in over 250 cities 10-year plans to end homelessness, they've been cutting Section 8, they've been cutting public housing, they've been cutting the community development block grant funding and home funding, which is what we use to build affordable housing. So we do need a broad reprioritization of our particularly national federal spending policies. But as we look at the question of what's happening in suburban areas or outlying rural areas, I go back to talking to the head of the state Housing and Community Services Agency 2 years ago, who said to me as he learned about our launch of the 10-year plan, he said, "Well, every place I go now around the state, I'm hearing people talking about their homeless problem in their own community. It's not just a Portland problem, and I can be in Hermiston or I can be